Om Shanti. Today we have a very special guest and our dear brother Charlie, who is a national coordinator of Brahma Kumaris in Australia and also the chairman of its board of directors. He visits over 40 Brahma Kumaris venues in Australia for different workshops, conferences, and sustenance. And he will be interviewed today by Sister Julia, who has been with Baba for 36 years, and she is a Brahma Kumaris representative in New York for over, I think, 30 years and lives in New York. Today's topic is my favorite topic, what is the sustenance at this time? And I think that Brother Charlie is really an embodiment of sustenance, and he has such a gentle, nurturing nature. When he came to Vancouver, he taught us that the most important relationship we have is the relationship with the self. And I think that you, Brother Charlie, you have passed this contentment certificate because you have really earned that contentment by Brahmin family and Baba and by the self. So I would appreciate if you could write down the questions and put it here, and we will give the questions to Julia, and then all your questions will be answered. So instead of giving the questions and standing up here, we would like you to write down the questions. Thank you. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. Good morning, everyone. It's lovely to be here with all of you, and of course with our lovely brother Charlie, whom I have known actually ever since I became a Brahmin. So 37 years with Baba, and I first met Charlie in Australia. I think Daddy Janki was speaking, and there was Charlie on the stage. And so he is someone who plays a big role in sustaining the family, and certainly I have gained a lot of your sustenance over the years, Charlie. Our theme this evening, or this morning, is what is sustenance at this time of the confluence age. And I'm sure that the way that you have sustained yourself over these years has possibly changed, and also perhaps your sustaining of the family. So Charlie, what is sustenance at this time? Charlie's going to talk for, I'll just say that Charlie's going to answer that question for about 20 or 25 minutes. Then we're going to be in conversation together. I'll ask him some questions. And as the sister said, that if you have any questions during this whole time, if you write them down and then put them, where did she say to put them? And put them in the box that I can't see. And then we will ask Charlie those questions at the end. Okay?
Yeah. So good morning, everyone, and thank you so much, Palma and Julia. Yeah, it's always lovely to be back in Madhavan, isn't it? And yesterday I was downstairs. I love that terminology here, upstairs, downstairs. And we had our RC meeting, and it was the first day. And the RC group has been going for 40 years. We're going to have a lunch tomorrow to celebrate 40 years. Amazing. But over the last 5 years or so, maybe longer, 7 years, Bridge Moenbhai was a part of the RC group. And I think many of you know he's an extraordinary intellect, Bridge Moenbhai. But I remember in one of our meetings, one of the sisters asked him or said to him, Brij Mohan Bhai, in a quite an alarming way, what is happening? And she went on to say that, She went on to say that Baba's not coming anymore, there's no daddies left, there's very few seniors around. During COVID, we couldn't go to the centres, we couldn't meet the family. And once again with her hand, she said, what is happening? And Brij Mohan Bhai first said, well, they've been asking that question since 1936. And really it's true, isn't it? There's just so much change in our yajna. And it just continues to change. Constantly there's change. And even in my Brahman life, I've just seen so much change from when I first came to Madhuban. It was 1975. The yajna was just Pandav Bhavan. No Om Shanti Bhavan, no Sukhdham. The yajna had one car. It was a beautiful ambassador. And one bus. It was just so simple, but a lot of spiritual power. But a lot of the things that have sustained us are not around anymore. And so I think a part of being a spiritual person is constantly adjusting to what's in front and dealing with what's in front. And one of my favorite points of Gyan is that there is benefit in everything. Do you believe that? Really, really? Everything? Wow, good response there. Because what I observe is what's happening at the moment is that all the supports, like the lights, all the supports are going. All the supports which have sustained us for a long time are not here anymore. But ultimately, what is the aim? Why are we all here? Why did we come to Baba? I think the ultimate aim of this life is really to take full support from one. And so gently, gently, and in a way it is gentle, all these supports are going, it's preparing me so that I take support from one. And ultimately, that is the destination of this life. And that's how I see this time. A lot of things that we came to Madhuban for, to meet Bap Dada, have personal meetings at one point, to spend time with the daddies, etc. It's not available as it was. But in one sense, it's preparing me so I create an absolute foundation with Baba. I'm fully sustained by one, because that's my destination. And I often mention that my first meeting with Baba was in the history hall in Pandav Bhavan. And I was only a few months in Gyan. I was incredibly new. It was December 1975. And there wasn't maybe a quarter of the number of people in this hall now. It's just like my memory says about 40, 50. And Baba spoke the Mauli, and then I was invited with two others. The double foreigner season was three of us, to sit in front of Baba. And Baba gave me drishti and then mentioned a few things, but he asked me two questions. And in a way, I felt these two questions have sort of been, Baba asked these questions, they've sort of guided my personal journey. I was only 2 months in Gyan, I went quite early. And the first question Baba said, do you have one Shiv Baba and none other? 2 months in Gyan, I went, yes. You can't say no to Baba. And next question, you know, are you stable on drama? And I went, yes. Because, you know, in a way, when Baba gives the blessing, it's not saying that's what you are, but that's where you can go. That's what you can achieve. And I've always really felt that ultimately, in the confluence age, to be sustained by one is the ultimate destination. And this is really where Baba is taking us. And if I really sort of reflect on the history of sustenance in this yagya, because in a way the whole yagya is created to sustain us to the point that we create a new world. And as I often mention these days, I've been a few times to Pakistan in the last few years. And when I went to Kunch Bhavan, which is that huge house where Mama lived with all the Kumaris, the atmosphere in that place is something I can't describe. It's such an incredible atmosphere. But when you think about 300 people were sustained directly every day, most of the day, by God and the number one human soul. And sometimes I think, what action did those souls do? What karma to have those 14 years of absolute sustenance from the two greatest sustainers ever? It's an incredible account when you think about it. So that was the period of maximum sustenance. And the second period, they went all throughout India. And so in a sense, I sort of feel it was even then that Baba giving a gentle step towards independence. At the end of the cycle, we were absolutely dependent on everything, our bodies, our relationships, our roles, absolutely everything. So this journey towards self-sustenance and independence. So they went out and to all parts of India. But you know, Daddy Prakashmani told us once that Baba wrote her a letter every day. Could you believe that? You know the letters of the big red pen that you see? Baba would write with the big red pen. It might only be a few words, but and a blessing. Imagine that. What incredible sustenance. But then Baba knew her part, and Baba was preparing her from her part. The third phase was really the avyakt part. Baba became avyakt. And you know Didi Manmohini, who was an extraordinary soul, such a yogi, she once said, "I didn't make much effort until Baba left his body and became avyakt. Baba was in front of us. And that was enough. Baba was there. Baba was everything." But when Baba went up there, she said, "I had to make much more effort to remember." And if I even think of my own journey, when first 10 years I came, I met Baba many, many times personally. And to the point I never even wrote down what Baba said. That was Madhuban. Madhuban was you came and you had your chance to meet Baba. And then after some years, it went from personal meetings to just the center. So you wouldn't meet personally, but the whole center would sit in front of Baba and Baba would give a lot of blessings. And then it moved to each country. A country would sit in front of Baba. And then it moved to the region. And then... and so in a way, you could almost see like Baba preparing us gently, 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 you know, making us, in a sense, independent, self-sufficient, you know, really being sustained more through my own effort. And then finally, this period, which I feel in a way began when Baba spoke his last Maulian on New Year's Eve, which was 2017-18. And, you know, the other day, I don't know whether you heard, but in the Saka Mauli, about 10 days ago, Baba said, "There will be a time when you will not be able to come here from abroad." Did you hear that? It was about a week ago. So even this season, even all of us coming together, coming to Madhuban, having this incredible sort of atmosphere of the divine family, this part will also finish. And it's like Baba taking us step by step on this incredible journey to independence, which is like a state of self-respect, isn't it? That I can live in this world, interact in this world, but I'm sustained by one. And that, I think, is just such a recipe to make me powerful. And sometimes I've asked the question, you know, what sustains me? What is really sustaining me? If I ask my heart absolutely honestly, is it faith? Does faith really sustain me? In other words, am I more a devotee soul? I have that devotee sanskara, that faith. And faith is a wonderful thing. Faith is a powerful thing. But is that the main thing that's sustaining me here? Or is it gyan? I mean, gyan is wonderful. And Baba wants us to absorb gyan deeply. But is gyan absorbed in my life? Or does it just sit in my head? Is it more a theoretical set of beliefs? Because if it is, I can still shake. Or is it service? Is service what's sustaining me? Am I a doing intellect? You know? And I feel this is an incredibly powerful form of sustenance for most of us, because for half a cycle we've been sustained by doing an action and getting a result, getting an outcome. That's how we sustained ourselves. I do something, you will love me, you will respect me, you will support me, whatever it may be. And it's such a powerful pattern. I honestly sometimes feel that, you know, we all know to remember Baba is quite an elevated state, isn't it? To keep my intellect with one. And when I sit to remember Baba and I wander here and I wander there, and this goes on for a long time, sometimes I think deep down I feel a failure at meditation. I'm not good at meditation. So to compensate, I love Baba, but I feel a bit of a failure in yoga. To compensate that, I get into my old pattern of doing action to fill my heart with that temporary feeling of fulfillment, something successful. I get a bit of praise. I get a bit of respect. I feel good about who I am. So, well, I think service is also good. All these things are good. But ultimately, what is sustaining me? Or am I sustained by the family? Am I more of a householder that I just love to come together because this family is just so unique? You don't get this atmosphere anywhere. And do I feel that when I'm on my own, a little bit lonely, a little bit lost, a little bit distant, disconnected? Or am I sustained by spiritual experience? Because am I a yogi intellect? And ultimately, for me, I feel that's where I would really like to go, to really live in this world, interact with everyone, love that, but I'm really sustained by Baba. And I sometimes ask the question, you know, we're Brahmins, I'm a Brahmin, how much am I really on the pilgrimage of remembrance? If this is the ultimate teaching of God, because when you listen to the Sakamoli, more and more, it's almost like every day Baba in a different way presents, children remember me in hundreds of different ways, because ultimately the highest sustenance is that being on this pilgrimage and experiencing the love, the purity, the power of Baba, feeling sustained by that. And when I'm really on that pilgrimage, it fills me with so much love and power. I feel it pulls me beyond all the other pilgrimages of the intellect to people and service and all the limited forms of sustenance, because this is the unlimited form that I think Baba really wants us to be sustained by. And I remember once a group of we brothers were walking in front of Baba. Remember when we used to have the walk by, and Baba you'd get your 2.12 seconds of drishti. Do you remember that? And Baba stopped us, a group, and said, "I want to speak to you." And when we came in front of Baba, Baba said so many lovely things, but four or five times Baba said, "To sustain yourselves, create new experiences in yoga." And I often reflect on that, because the pattern, I think, in Brahman life is we come to Baba, we have a few extraordinary experiences, you know, visions, experiences. And then often we settle back into a pattern. And I often ask the question when I sit to meditate, am I just thinking about Baba or am I connecting to Baba? Big difference. Yes, when I think about Baba, I just have nice thoughts about Baba. It sustains me. But when I become bodiless and I really feel the presence and the connection, I think that quality of belonging and love and sustenance is something which is so special. Once I went to stay with Jagdish Bhai in Delhi, and we were chatting, and I asked him, for someone like me, what would you suggest to sustain myself? What would you suggest? Straight away he said, create new experiences in yoga every day. And he said, that's actually churning knowledge. Churning knowledge is to take knowledge and transform it into an experience. And we all know when you feel something, you really feel sustained, uplifted, full internally. And I feel in a way that's what Baba really wants. He really wants us to really be self-sustainers, stand on my own two feet. And I think it's a really interesting thing when we use this word sustenance. Is it that I just sit and I allow someone or something to sustain me? Or do I take responsibility for my own sustenance? Because sometimes it's like we become very passive. We just want to sit there. You should sustain me. This should sustain me. Brahman life, the Brahman family, it all should sustain me. But actually, I think Baba wants us to really become masters of sustaining myself, knowing the art of keeping, you know, myself full. To me, the ultimate sustenance is the fundamental thing of Brahman life, all relationships with one Baba. To me, that's what this life really is about. What is Raj Yoga? To me, it is really packing up at the end of the cycle, all connections, interacting, loving, all that, and this is my one life with God. Because I've often thought that when I remember the one who's incorporeal, egoless, and viceless, if that's my whole form of sustenance, what do I become? The natural consequences, I move into that space. But when I love Baba, and I do remember Baba, but I also remember human beings, get caught up in human beings, whether attraction or repulsion, I'm just sort of lost in that human story. What happens is that it sustains my old sanskaras. It's like I remember Baba, and the more I remember Baba, I move towards that egoless, viceless stage. But suddenly, in one second, I remember human beings, even get caught in analyzing their behavior. And then I sustain my old sanskaras. I sustain my old story. So I feel a bit stuck. I'm not really moving forward because, in a sense, I'm still seeking sustenance from others. And I think this is a really deep thing, and why the constant message from the one who really is knowledgeable is, children, remember me alone. And for me, and I won't go on too much longer, but for me, I think what sustains me is definitely the feeling of being loved, the feeling of belonging. You know, these feelings with Baba, and what I try to do is make them absolutely real. I'm not just believing God's the ocean of love, but making it tangible and a real feeling in that way. And what I began to do a few years ago is just observe, you know, my intellect, because the intellect's a fascinating part of the anatomy. It's always traveling, searching, seeking, and connecting. And in a way, remembrance will sustain me or drain me, one or the other. So when I remember Shiv Baba, it's like I connect, I, the soul, remember I put myself completely under the influence of Shiv Baba. I sometimes like the word, I live stream that vibration into the sacred space of my mind. And that feeling, that vibe, that light, sweet, pure, clean feeling sustains me and sustains those around me. Because just your presence, your vibration, and it even sustains the atmosphere. It's the ultimate sustenance. But if the subtle thread remembers human beings, you know, even if I remember a family member I'm close to, I have a loving relationship. First I connect, if the intellect in a millisecond connects with that person, because there's a loving relationship, I'm influenced by that love and I experience calm and peace, but it's temporary. It's a temporary form of sustenance. But if I remember a person, I connect with a person I'm in conflict with, and the instant you travel, it may be way back in our country, and you touch that person, you're influenced by that conflict, internal disharmony, peacelessness, discomfort, and I download this feeling of peacelessness. So I'm drained. My peaceless thoughts, my hurt thoughts, my unhappy thoughts drain me. And in a way I was observing, it's almost like I do a self-audit, an accounting. Am I sustaining? Am I accumulating? Or am I draining? Whatever the subtle thread is connecting to, I either accumulate and feel full, or I drain and I feel empty. And this is our journey, isn't it? This is such an amazing journey that Baba has us on. And just finally, the other thing I find really important for my sustenance, I would say, is feelings. And I think a lot of our study now is to keep my feelings clean, pure. To live in a world with all this stuff going on, with all the behaviors, all the attitudes, everything which we know, sometimes extremely negative. And yet my part is to keep sweet, light, pure, clean, benevolent feelings in my mind. Not a small thing, is it?
No.
Because our addiction is to absorb the feelings of the world. Absolutely absorb everything. And yet, I really do think that this is detachment in a way, where I remember Baba, I download those sweet feelings in my mind, and I don't allow myself to lose them. Because what I often feel is that when we see something wrong, we see a bad behavior, whatever it may be, and I let it into my mind and it drives my thinking. You know, it's like my sense of justice often kicks in. That's wrong. That shouldn't be happening. That's not good. I justify my negative feeling. But I forget that actually it makes me feel weak. It drains me. I feel vulnerable. And in a way, you know, what is body consciousness? Body consciousness is I see bad behavior. I hear bad things, wrong things, and I let it in my mind and I have negative feeling, critical feeling, bad feeling, hurt feeling. What is soul consciousness? I still see the behavior. I'm aware of that bad behavior, but I maintain good feelings in my mind. To me, when I understand that it's not that you don't see what's happening, you're aware. Even Baba sees our bad behavior. But I realize if I'm going to feel full, if I'm going to feel, you know, sustained and full inside, I've got to keep my mind very light and clean. If I allow other people's behavior and it pollutes my inner world. You feel weak, you feel a bit low, you feel a bit down, and you don't feel full and sustained in that way. So.
Charlie, well, it was interesting because I brought my pad up here to write questions down as you were talking, and my support just ran out, no ink. So I have to leave my notebook, my support. When I was listening to you, and I agree very much about, we're very lucky over the years, and even in the short time that we may have been with Baba, that there are so many forms of sustenance offered. We have our Murali, we have our family, we have many things. We have service, a big one, to help support us. But when you're feeling a little bit low, perhaps you've allowed negative thoughts and things to come, and you know that you want to make a shift, you want to experience Baba's love, how do you change? Because I was listening to you when you were saying about your thoughts. It's not just thinking, if knowledge is the thing that sustains you, it's not just thinking about what you've been told this morning or what Baba has been saying to you, but you've got to change it into an experience. So in those moments when you're not feeling so good, how do you make that shift? You're talking about feelings, but how do you, you're not feeling so good, so how do you then make the shift of creating an experience when your feelings are not so good?
Sometimes, to be honest, I'm aware it just takes time. Time just changes those feelings because they can be very deep habits, can't they, the reaction. But the more I've become aware that I feel one of the keys is I am fully responsible. Mm. Even if I'm feeling a bit low, if you observe your mind, often you're feeling it's because of this happened or this person, this situation, I'm not valued. And I'm sort of projecting onto so many other things. I think when you take responsibility, somehow I find a lot of that slightly heaviness that comes with feeling a bit low, it's now starting to penetrate that sort of sacred inner space, which I'm, you know, in a way I think we've allowed our inner space, which is really who I am, to be absolutely influenced by everything. So hence we were like this, because mm-hmm. I often use that expression, that sort of example, that we're like a vacuum cleaner, we're empty. So someone gives me love, someone gives me respect, someone insults me, someone criticizes me, I just take it all in and then I sort of project back. But as I go on this journey with Baba, I start to realize I have to sustain this space. I'm responsible for absolutely every thought and feeling. And I think that has really helped me bounce back much quicker. But the main thing I try to do is become absolutely simple and sit in front of Baba and allow Baba to love me. Mm. Mm. That's simple. Because sometimes, you know, we get so caught up in our head, analyzing, trying to process, trying to understand. That in itself keeps me stuck in that space. Mm. But sometimes just sitting in front of Baba, and it may not fully change, but it opens the door and the feelings, the positive feelings can come back. But it does take patience. In one way, I've also feeling that a great sustainer in this world is to be detached. Mm-hmm. I feel the time is giving us a message. If I want to operate in this world and survive well, I have to be deeply detached from everything going on around me. But I always like to qualify that Baba's way is to be so engaged, so close, so kind, so connected, but non-absorbing, uninfluenced. And I think that is really such an essential way to sustain myself. Otherwise, all the moods, the news, the atmospheres, the stories, everything just impacts and I absorb it. So my inner world is you know, I've lost control. Mm-hmm. But when you're detached, you're sustaining the feelings in your mind more. You can maintain them even in quite negative circumstances. Like everything, it's practice.
Yeah, practice and experience, isn't it? Because
yeah.
I think sometimes, I don't know about you, probably not, but I know that sometimes if I've felt in a situation which is difficult and I'm not able to change how I feel about it, even though I know that that is what is going to make me feel better, what can happen is that you decide that you need to be kind of distracted because you're not able to respond properly. So the best thing to do is to perhaps remove yourself physically or get distracted on your phone or find some other form that will kind of just take you away for a while. But as you were saying so rightly, that actually drains you.
Yeah.
Even though in the moment you may feel entertained so that your mind is taken away from the situation, it actually, after some time, you will feel that drain and you then aren't able to kind of bounce back and you're not then able to perhaps go back and respond in the right way. But I know that sometimes what I do, it's lucky if you live in a center, but actually just to go into Baba's room is so helpful. Just to go and sit in front, sometimes not even think. Sometimes not think about the problem or think of how you should respond, but just go and be with God who loves you. And then when you experience that love, then you're able to respond differently.
Yeah. You step back into your, you know, your right space.
Mm.
Sometimes I wonder with the whole role of the mobile phone,
yeah.
is a constant distraction because the mind, you know, the human mind at the end of the cycle is just so overactive because if I stop and I have no responsibility, nothing, let's say in the middle of the night I wake up, where does my mind go? Mm. Often it goes into rather dark and sad places.
Mm.
It's almost the, you know, the karmic pulls that go to the sadness and the unhappiness and the feelings of what how I've been treated and what people have done to me. And so the phone just keeps me on the surface. It sort of suppresses.
Yeah.
It suppresses what's really there. Because, and that's why I think people, I went to one country and I was running a workshop. And I said, okay, everyone, can we just be silent for 15 minutes? They all kept talking. So I said, is it okay? Can we be silent for a few minutes? And they said, hey, we don't do silence here. That's exactly what they said. Meaning that, and I think that's such a case because you do, you start, if you're on your own with just your thoughts, what happens? I think the human intellect is so weak now, it will just go back into unhappy places. So the phone plays a great part just to keep me on the surface, keep me distracted. You know. Anyway, that's one of my feelings about it.
No, I think it's true. I mean, you can, if you notice that about yourself, going to your phone or going somewhere to be distracted, you can kind of discipline yourself to say, you know, I'm not going to look at that before such and such. So that kind of gives perimeters. But I still think that you've got to change your interest. If you're really going to sustain your practice and not get distracted, it's not just because you know you shouldn't, but you've got to create a real interest in what you're doing. And that actually comes from experimentation, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. you know, I often mention to one big, huge turning point for me with Baba, my journey with Baba, was in 1985 when Baba got us to do the realization course.
Oh, yes.
Was anyone around at that time in 1985?
Yeah. I wasn't around, but I remember somebody gave me the Muralis of the realization course.
Yeah. But Baba said such an incredible thing. Baba said, children, you know the knowledge, you believe the knowledge, You teach the knowledge, but you don't experience the knowledge. And that just opened up something so much in my head that, you know, we can know the knowledge and that sustains me to a certain level. But when I extract the truth and it becomes my knowledge, I really am tasting the result of the knowledge, then that's an incredible power of sustenance. I think, you know, you think in your Brahman life that when you've had a really unique spiritual experience, you feel absolutely bodiless, or you feel so clearly the actual presence of Baba, etc. That can sustain you for weeks, just an experience. And yet that art form, not just to believe, we know and we believe, but to take it into the dimension of converting what we believe into what I feel, that seems to be the real art form that can, you know, can sustain me. And how much do we do that? Because we listen to information, we store information, and that's helpful because it helps me understand myself and what's going around. But how much do we really taste and feel those experiences? Mm-hmm. And that's what I think a yogi intellect is different, you know, when you really feel in yoga. And like Jagdish Bhai said to me, you know, to sustain yourself, new experiences every day. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I really feel we start to wander away, you know, we get pulled by so many different things. Experiences keep me focused.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, when we're thinking about also sustaining the family, how I was remembering Daddy Janki and what a sustainer she was, not just in terms of giving classes and things like that, but she was very, very attentive to the family and attentive to needs. And I think some of sustaining is caring for, seeing the need, and responding to that. As our family is aging a little bit now.
No.
I know I am. sometimes I think it can happen that the older ones, who aren't able to do so much physically perhaps, and have in the past played a big role perhaps in the family, but because they're not able to do so much, they can feel a little bit kind of sidelined. How do you see us as a family helping to sustain our elders?
You know, I think the seed of it, though, is that even after many years in Brahman life, I define my sense of self by what I do.
Yeah.
So when I can't do what I used to do, then I feel a bit sidelined. Mm. I feel a bit sidelined. Mm. And that's where I think Baba wants us to define ourselves by who I am. Mm. I'm a soul. Because, you know, I really feel the main sustenance is vibrations, feelings. And really, why did everyone love the daddies so much? Because they had, those 14 years of tapasya and soul conscious practice, the whole vibe of all of them was different. It was very light, very sweet, very humble, attractive, and it just the company uplifts. And to me, that's the service these days, lokically and alokically, even in the divine family. You know, just I feel the main role of an instrument soul is to hold the value of everyone in the attitude, you know, like because, you know, we all know when we get drishti from someone who's loving, who's seeing your value, that's one of the most uplifting experiences. You'll never forget that person made you feel something in that way. And, you know, what does Baba say? You know, all the recent Avyak Molis, children, do service through your face, do service through your vibrations, do service through your attitude. And in a way, you know, the more I make my feelings clean, then people get those clean feelings. Because my experience is, even if you hold some memories of people in the back of your mind, of their behavior, and I don't say anything, but they feel it.
Mm-hmm.
They feel that subtle. It's a very, very subtle thing. So it's not absolutely clean. And I mean, I think that the last Borg message that Daddy Gozar brought, I was having breakfast with Nirbhay, and you know, we almost finished breakfast, and he said, "Oh, Daddy Gozar rang me this morning," and that was when she was in Mumbai and not very well.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, it was her last Borg message. And Baba said three things. It was the one where he said, you know, increase your power of yoga, which we would expect. But secondly, clear all your mental accounts with every other soul. Every soul, Baba said. And to me, you know, that's the big place where we keep getting stuck in people, behaviors, attitudes. And I think it's like a decision we just let it go, just move on, because I think that drains me.
Mm-hmm.
I love Baba, I'm here because of Baba, but I get so drained because I get so caught up in how people should be and what they're saying and what they're doing. And when we have that sort of become the benevolent observer, we just observe with benevolent feelings, I feel uplifted, and then people get sweet feelings from me as well. And I love that expression, you know, your mind is like a perfume, and when the thoughts and feelings are very close to Baba, that perfume has an amazing spiritual power to sustain. And that's what the older Brahmins, they've got so much experience of Brahmin life, and that's, I feel every center needs a daddy-like personality, a motherly personality, who's just there to love people and care for people and have good wishes for people, non-judgmental sort of. And that's why I think, you know, Baba has sort of had the sisters and the mothers playing that part to just create that fragrance. And then I think when people feel that, they'll do so much service for Baba when they feel that sort of fragrance. So rather than feeling I can't do all the action, feel now I have to really serve more in a yogi way.
I think you know, I was also thinking about drama, how drama also sustains us. And a few examples of older people who have gone through the transition of being very, very active in service, and then suddenly something happening or drama taking something away, and they find themselves without that. And afterwards, having gone through it, then saying, you know, it was such a big upheaval because I did not realize how attached I was to what I was doing. I was totally caught up in it, and it had kind of become me, and then it was taken away, and it was a huge upheaval. And then having gone through it, as you say, the realization of now they're doing something in a different way, but it's equally as valuable. And then, of course, it's actually been more valuable for them because they've realized the work that they had to do, which if drama hadn't shown them that, they wouldn't have had the opportunity.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is amazing, isn't it, that with all our years of practice of soul consciousness, how deep is the definition of self by what I do, what I achieve, you know, where I sit in this world. Even after so many years, it's still my sense of self. And yet Baba's trying to educate us to bring all our value of who I am. And that is a much more effective form of service. Mm-hmm. Serving by who I am being rather than what I know and what I do. That's good, but the really elevated service is, you know, and Baba uses the language Mansa Seva. You know, sometimes we sort of think we can see the effect of an action because we're in the physical world and you do something and you can really see its tangible result. But a pure thought is so incognito. Mm-hmm. And yet probably the most powerful energy in the universe is an absolutely loving thought for the incorporeal.
Mm-hmm.
That frequency is changing everything, absolutely everything. And ultimately that's, you know, us remembering Baba is the highest service, but it's very incognito.
Mm-hmm.
And we still want to see results out there. And that's why Brahma Baba is so amazing, because he serves 24/7 in an incognito way. Like everyone's loving him here, but he's not getting that tangible result in that sense.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think then when we first become a Brahman, it's that wonder of who we really are that draws us. It's not what we do or what we can offer or anything like that. It's the magic of understanding who we are and then who Baba is. That's the pull to begin with, and then we kind of get a little bit lost sometimes along the way. Thank you. Are there any questions from the... somebody was going to go through the questions. How are you going to get it out? It's like my pen's dried. Okay, well done, Dorothy.
They're coming slowly.
The magic book. Okay. Shall I come and get it?
Well, they're coming to now. Once I remember thinking that, you know, my conscience sustains me too. Because when I do actions according to my truth, you know, I feel very comfortable with who I am. But when I do actions that are against my principles, my values, you know, my desires pull me in a different direction, and I feel heavy or guilty, or I think that can be incredibly draining, incredibly draining. So even just understanding, you know, the power of Srimat and how, you know, Srimat, for me always, I think, is a deep code of truth in action. It's not rules and regulations. No one likes rules and regulations much, but when I understand that when I live according to my truth, the conscience is light, that's a great form of sustenance. But when I do actions against my truth, I can feel so uncomfortable inside, and it really drains you deeply, deeply of your sense of self-value and so on.
Well, we have four questions, Charlie, all of them very good questions. The first one, just because it's connected with what you were saying about the Borg message from Daddy Gulzar. In Daddy Gulzar's last Borg message, what was the third point we need to be attentive about?
That's my bad habit. I often forget. Get up to it. That was the one where Baba said, store grains. And so the very practical thing.
Yeah,
it was to store food and good water. And yeah, and that's a whole interesting story, isn't it? Mm. Because it's like a physical sustenance in one way, which we all did in the year 2000. And I don't know how much people do now, but obviously seeing our world, I think we're going to pay a lot of more attention to doing that.
I think it is important. And I know in New York, even if we're going to have a snowstorm, suddenly all the shops become bare. Yeah. And usually it's loo paper that goes first, which is really strange, isn't it? But
it's a worldwide...
But yes, I remember it was the physical things we need to take care of. So these are quite kind of deep questions in the sense that it might take a little bit of time, but please describe the practice and experience of the state of soul consciousness when you protect your secret inner space while being fully engaged. being inside while being outside?
Yeah, that's such a great question, isn't it? I think that this is what I used to feel about Daddy G. Daddy G was so present, so connected. But a few times I was with her, I observed how she was so detached. And it really taught me, because that word detachment is, it just gives so many feelings of disconnection and so on. But I felt Daddy was so, you know, fully present internally and just watching here, engaging and fully. And that's where I think you can only really be so uninfluenced by, you know, engage with life, giving, interacting, hearing all the problems, doing all that, but remaining so centered. And that's not changing how you feel when you're detached. Because, you know, I think being loving and detached is really one of the most elevated states of spirituality. What does it mean? You're in this world, you're engaged in this world, but you are not drinking in anything of this world, even anyone's mood or behavior. And once I saw Daddy G walk into the courtyard, and those of us who remember her, she would walk in, and if there's people, she would nod to everyone.
Yes, I do.
It's her nod of acknowledgement. She was always acknowledging. And she got to one person who was really quite rude to her, really reactive and rude. But she nodded to her, and she just kept going. And I could see that she hadn't absorbed it, you know, because you can tell on the face when someone has, it's entered the mind, non-absorbed at all. And I sort of have thought a lot about this detachment, because I feel it's going to be so essential for all of us in the near future. Mm. And to me, the natural way, it's a byproduct of an incredibly deep link with Baba. You're so absorbed in Baba, it's almost like you're pulled beyond the influence of every. It's a natural. It's not that I'm sort of thinking, oh, I have to be detached, I must be detached. You know, I'm chanting the mantra.
Mm-hmm.
It's a consequence, a natural consequence. Because, you know, we've all seen Daddy Janki. I mean, even Divi Nirmala, she was incredibly detached. She was detached. But, and in a way, I think that sustains me. Because you're not absorbing all the issues, the problems, the stories, the stuff. Because that just clogs up your whole inner world when you allow yourself to get stuck in all that place. It's not that you're not trying to help, but you don't allow it to overtake you.
Are you ever in a situation where you're realizing actually that you are being affected? That secret, beautifully how she said, a secret inner space is being affected?
Yeah.
And then what do you do in that moment as you're practically living your life to safeguard yourself, to make that shift in the moment?
As I was saying, just to take responsibility. Because I think deep, deep down, we still think it's them. They're the one who's really made me feel this. But when I fully take responsibility, I feel instantly a little bit better. Might not be fully gone, but instantly, I step back into something. The other thing I find that I felt less influenced to remain in that sacred space is service, actually, in the sense that what's the spiritual thing of service? What's the spiritual aspect? It's giving.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you're giving out, the less you take in. And so you protect that space almost automatically because... And I feel it's the formula of the confluence age. Remember one and give to all. This is the formula that works in the confluence age. And the more, look at the daddies, just morning to night, giving, 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 giving. And so how much do you absorb? You just have no time much. And even if you do absorb briefly, you're back into the giving again. But it should be giving as an instrument from Baba, not giving of for me, because that is not really that clean or that elevated. But really, you have a genuine sense, I'm just instrumental to...
And not getting lost in the service and thinking that's what you're, that's who you are. Because that's the...
It's a fine line.
Fine line, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
This is a big question as well. These are quite big questions. Okay. To get one's support, in today's Murli, Baba said, to remember someone, you should know him very well. How do you explore Baba?
You know, sometimes I like to, as I said earlier, take myself to Karachi. Because can you imagine that Shiv Baba spent a lot of the time in the body of Brahma? And that personality was present through a human form for 14 years, a lot of the time. So, even though Baba's incorporeal, he doesn't have his own body, he revealed himself. And it best makes, you know, Baba, I often feel my religious beliefs about God colour who Baba fundamentally is just the most lovely soul that exists, the most attractive soul that exists, the most, you know, when someone is so egoless, it really pulls your heart, you know, because they're just so lovable in their own way. And I think a lot of, you know, you can really only love someone when they're lovable. You know, you have to understand how lovable they are, and that's the quest in this life to, you know, in Karachi they could see the personality through a body, but in the Murli, Baba reveals his personality in the Murli, and it's amazing, isn't it, how absolutely innocent Baba is in one way and totally wise in another way. How he's absolutely, totally gentle in one way and total power. You know, it's like exploring the personality, because if it's still more God in a religious way, I don't know, it seems distant. Baba seems distant. You know, like you and I are both souls talking to each other. But the soul expresses through the body. Baba's a soul, but he has a personality, he has sanskaras, and it's like really exploring and bringing that personality to life, because that's what attracts you to anyone or anything in that way. And because when Baba becomes lovable, your heart is automatically attracted. So I'm not forcing myself to remember a point of light. You know, I like to become bodiless and remember Baba in that form, but it doesn't pull your heart. Sometimes Baba is very formal, and that's what I mean by the religious overtone. Still, we sort of look through a religious lens rather than, of all the 8.2 billion souls, the most attractive of all is Shiv Baba. And his purity and... And you know, Baba's got a great sense of humour. How could you love someone who doesn't have a sense of humour? I mean, when Baba says things like in the Murli, I never said I was omnipresent. I mean, I just love the way Baba has these quirky, he's quirky too sometimes. And that's what makes you a personality attractive. But our challenge is that Baba doesn't have a body, and that's a whole part of our journey, isn't it, is how to have a real living relationship with a soul that does not have a human form.
I know that when you're saying about how Baba revealed himself through Brahma Baba and how your experiences or the impact that Karachi made on you, for those of us who haven't been to Karachi, I know also Avyat Bhavdada, and as you say, has a personality.
Absolutely.
And I remember when I was first a Brahmin and I had come across this knowledge in Bali and then went to Australia, which is where I met you. And I can remember the first time it was in Om Shanti Bhavan and meeting Baba, who I had heard about and started to practice connecting to. And very rudely, I have to say, in fact, somebody had a picture of it, which I totally forgotten about until somebody sent it to me. I was literally leaning over and kind of looking in his eyes and saying, well, are you in there? To try and see who this soul was. And the experience that I had, which kind of overrid my religious idea of who God was, even though it wasn't very religious in the sense of, you know, following a traditional religion, but still it was my own idea of who God was. And I suddenly realized that Baba was introducing himself to me. It wasn't who I thought he was. And absolutely charming.
Yeah.
Now, who would have given God the word charming? Not me. I would never have thought, but the personality was so, like you say, attractive and charming and focused just on you and still and yet alive. And so I got all those experiences by, you know, being rather rude and staring into his eyes and looking for him in there. But that strong realization that God wasn't who I thought he was. He was himself revealing himself to me. And that often, as it's here saying in Amrit Vela, that image or that feeling of that introduction to God really connects to my heart.
Absolutely. You know, once I met Baba in the History Hall, and I had been living in Melbourne, and I'd been asked to move to Sydney. And this is in 1980. And when I got there was a brother's house there. Some brothers living together, there were some problems. They weren't getting on so well. And so I sat in front of Baba, and Baba gave me drishti. And then Baba said, "Is everyone happy with you?" I didn't answer the question, by the way. And then Baba was so sweet. He said, "Don't worry, some aren't happy with Baba." I mean, Baba was so light and so... Yeah. And what then he went on to say something, oh, Baba met this one for 10 minutes, he only met me for 3 minutes, Baba gave a beva. And he went out of his way to make me feel better.
Yeah.
It was just incredible. And I really realized also that he knew me so well. Because sometimes, because Baba's subtle, you sort of think we're down here and he's... But no, Baba is very present in life. Sometimes I've had the thought, which world do I live in? Because, you know, the body conscious, you can get so absorbed in this world out here and the actions and people, behavior, situations. You can get so absorbed in your inner world, my story, self-absorbed. Or the third order is Baba's world, you know. Am I really there? Because when you're with Baba, you know, you're feeling his presence.
Mm-hmm.
It automatically takes you beyond getting caught up out there and caught up in here. And often I think it's almost like Baba is present, but the mind is so under the influence of the external, internal world. Just to make that relationship so natural, completely natural.
And it really makes you feel, you know, when Baba says, "Do you know how fortunate you are? You're the handful out of the handful that know me."
Yeah,
you know, because so many people have ideas of who God is, or but we're actually introduced to Baba. So how?
Once Baba said, "The crown, the main virtue of all virtues, is to have an intellect that can recognize God," and all of us in this hall have that virtue. Amazing.
I'm just remembering one little incident talking about the humor of Baba. And I was involved in the Call of the Time dialogues, and it was a particularly hard one, and I was fed up with the whole team. And And we, as a team, had been invited onto the stage to be in front of Baba. This was in the time when people didn't... We were starting not to meet him very much. And so everybody was around him. Everybody was really happy that the team were in front of Baba. And I was absolutely fed up. So I sat over there, kind of over there. And Baba spoke to everyone. And then it came up, he was giving an orange to everyone. And when it came to me, because I was so fed up, he went to give me the orange, and then I went to take it, and then he drew his hand back. And then he went to give it, and then he drew his hand back. And so he, like, played with me until I sort of... And then when he gave it to me, he said, "You don't get tired, do you?" And, you know, just like you were saying, what do you say to God? I said, "No."
Yeah.
Exactly. And I was totally tired of everybody. And and he said to me that happiness is the nourishment that will make you tireless. And then he gave me the orange. But that interaction, and as you say, that kind of knowing who you are. Mm. And I think those, perhaps some people haven't had the fortune of meeting Baba in person, but there's so many videos of how Baba is in his avect form that you can really feel the personality and his vibrations. You can bring that into your Amrit Vela to help you.
Absolutely. Now, I remember one Borg message which really engaged me as Baba's personality, that when we did Million Minutes of Peace, a bit of a similar thing. And we were so few and we had to work so hard for months. And we came to Madhuban and we all sat and Daddy Goza offered Borg. And when she came back, Baba showed this scene that all of us who had been involved, each one was sitting on a lotus flower in a beautiful lake. And then slowly, slowly, the petals of the lotus flower came up and started massaging us. And it was like the lotus flower was a massage machine.
Like this chair.
I thought, how creative is Baba? And we were all sitting there getting in our personal lotus massage machines. But it just made me feel just how wonderful Baba is.
Yes. You know? It's very personal, isn't
it? Yeah. And his sense of humor, his lightness. Because, you know, we've had 2,500 years of believing in a God that religions have given us. To deprogram myself and really know God as he really is. I wonder how much of our devotional stuff is still influencing our relationship with Baba.
Do we have time for the last question? I don't know. I'll say the question and you won't be able to, because it's a bit long, but they're all good. How do I know if I am having good Amrit Vela experiences or not? How do I create new experiences in yoga? And how do I make yoga an experience? We've gone into that a little. And then 2, how do I increase the bodiless stage while I'm at work? Is it possible to experience bodilessness while I am interacting with another? Maybe that's the question, since we don't have a lot of time, that you could...
You know, we all have our own view of things, but for me, when I sit in yoga, I aim to become completely bodiless. I love to do that. But in action, it's more soul consciousness. It's like I'm acting through the body. So it's more of a soul conscious stage, I would say. You know, once Baba gave a formula for experience. And he said, if you want to experience more, the first was become a point, become bodiless. The second, which I found the real key, is apply a point. And Baba went on to put a full stop to overthinking. Because what I've observed in myself, when you think and overanalyze, overprocess, you suppress experience. And we're just, often we're so thinking, analyzing, processing, we think so much, it suppresses the ability to move out of, it suppresses that sort of sense to feel.
Even if we're trying to experience or think about the thing we want to experience, we're suppressing the experience.
We think about it more than feel it. And then third is remember a point. And actually, when you go deep into that, become a point, apply a point, remember a point, it's a really amazing formula. Of course, that has to be unpacked. I feel the more I become completely detached from my temporary form, and the key to soul consciousness, or that is being incorporeal, that word is a fascinating word for me. I feel separate from this material form. It's almost like you step into a whole world of spiritual feelings, you know. That's, to me, the key to soul consciousness is the experience of being incorporeal. And I've often mentioned that I said to Didi Manmohini once, I asked her, Didi, of all the efforts Baba mentions, what's the most important? And straight away she said to be incorporeal. And she was the yogi. When I came, her yoga vibrations were palpable. They're a palpable feeling. It's a palpable feeling. And yeah, the feeling of being, I find that when I feel incorporeal, not believe it or chant it, but feel, I feel naturally, I'm in this world, but completely detached, naturally. And I realize you don't have to try to be detached, you just have to be incorporeal, and automatically you're in this world, but you're not impacted by this world.
So you can be at work, then going back to the question,
yeah.
You can be at work. Are you incorporeal while you're at work, or is it just a soul conscious awareness?
It's a
because
feeling.
You're interacting and things like that. So
yeah,
how to keep that?
But still, you know, like sometimes when I'm in a meeting, I really try to have that feeling. I'm present in the meeting, but I'm, you know, in that sweet place where you're beyond at the same time. It's hard to describe in words, but the feeling of being incorporeal is you're completely uninfluenced by what is happening in this material world, even though you're present here.
Even though you've got to respond to what's happening.
Absolutely. Because when you're completely self-conscious, it's like you're responding to life, but from a completely different place. You're still living. I mean, that's the beauty of this life. We don't withdraw at all. That's the sannyasi approach to dealing with stuff. We're present, but we change our consciousness to deal with it. Yeah.
Thank you, Charlie. So we've answered all the questions. And it was a very beautiful conversation. And I really liked how it focused so much on our own ourselves, sustaining ourselves. How can we do that? Because in these times, all the supports are starting to disappear. And so it's, as you were saying, these are imminent things that are going to happen. It's not, I think a little bit at the beginning, maybe years and years ago, we kind of had this long time stretching before us where we were going to be able to fulfill our destiny. But time is now.
You know, recently I was thinking, I'm starting again, but I'll stop. If you think 10 years ago, 2016, what were you doing? You know, in 10 years, we could all be in the golden age.
Yeah.
Could be that close. Who wants it to be that close? Well, the hands went really quick. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. To sustain ourselves. And the best part of it is really to remember that our ultimate destination is to be sustained by the One, by our own vibrations, spiritual vibrations, by our pure thoughts, and following, being truthful, following our truth. So that really sustains us in pure thoughts. Wonderful. Thank you, Julia, for asking great questions and sharing your experiences. And remember humor. This will sustain us. Before we go to meditation, I would like to remind you that today we have journaling session at the meditation hall, and we would appreciate if you could be there at 4:15 sharp. And also, when you leave, please help yourself with the art items there for you to pick it up. And we'll have a few minutes of meditation. Om Shanti.